The mules are in the corral. Welcome to Mule Talk, and I'm Cindy K. Roberts, your host.
And our author, TV personality, and world-renowned mule trainer, Meredith Hodges of the Lucky Three Ranch.
This week, I would like to talk about your views on assessing a mule for what his best abilities are. So go ahead, let's get started.
Okay, well, you know, this is something that most people really ought to do, but they don't. We often just look upon mules as, well, they're very big creatures, therefore we should be able to get on and ride them because we're so much smaller than they are. And we don't really take into consideration, you know, who they might be and what we're asking of them. And I think we need to just take a different look. And I kind of did that because I was having so much trouble in the training and everything of my mules. There was just so much resistance all the time, and we thought we were doing better because we were gentle breaking these animals, whereas before they used to put blindfolds on and fight with them all the time. And so of course we were getting better results, but we really hadn't gone far enough as far as I'm concerned. I think we often get tied up with stereotypes about different breeds being able to do different things. And, you know, I was always taught that, for instance, that walking animals, say mules out of Tennessee walkers and fox trotters and those kinds of things, were made for flat ground and they couldn't jump. Until I got Tilly, and Tilly had confirmation that actually allowed her to jump. And then it started making me look at a lot of different things about these animals.
Yeah.
Because Tilly was very well balanced in her body. Even though she was a Tennessee walker, she had a really good balance in her body. And in the article that I wrote for Mule Crossing, I attributed, I met with Richard Schrake, and he gave me this theory that he had, and he wanted me to test it on mules and see if it really worked. And it did. First of all, I said, oh, but we got to measure them. Well, I don't really like tape measures. I don't even like those measurements that are on a stick that you got to measure at the withers to find out how tall they are, because
right.
Sometimes they're accurate and sometimes they're not.
Uh-huh.
You know, it depends on how you trimmed your animal. You know, I mean, the measurement's going to be different anytime you measure them between trims, you know, so that kind of stuff I started looking at and everything. But Richard said, no, we don't have to do it that way. All you need is a piece of baling twine. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I can measure anything with a baling, you know, with baling twine. And I thought, well, you know, we use duct tape for a lot of things. So I'll hear him out. I'll hear him out, see what he says. You know, so then we went and got a mule and we started measuring. And he said, okay, first of all, you need to measure from the pole to the withers with this baling twine, and then flip it over to the croup and see if the measurements are the same. And then I'm getting it. I'm going, oh, we're not talking inches here. We're talking distance, just plain distance between points. And so if the distance that you measured from the pole to the withers is the same as what you measured from the withers to the croup, then what you have is an animal that's got the beginning of a balanced body. Now, a lot of the animals that you measure will be short in the neck, long in the back, and any variation thereof. And all of those differences will affect the way they move. Not only does it affect the way they move, it affects how they feel when they're moving. Is that going to create tension in their body? And if it's uneven, if that distance isn't the same, they can very easily get sore backs. you know, and they can get sore necks because the ones with the shorter necks can't really flex their neck enough to really stretch their back and break at the pole and carry themselves in a good postural balance. So that's just one measurement. You know, then you go to other measurements, and if the animal has a different measurement from the middle of the withers to the pole, and then you measure around the collar, and the measurement should be twice, or you measure it around the throat latch and around the collar, and the measurement around the collar should be twice that the measurement is around the throat latch. Once again, we're not talking inches here. We're just talking distance. So the baleen twine works just fine. But again, they will have difficulty flexing at the pole and rounding their neck and getting into a good flexible, elastic response to the bit. Then you get problems with them going against the bits. You get resistance there. When you measure from the pole to the withers, and then you measure them from the throat latch underneath to the center of their chest, that should be approximately, let's see, I think 1.25 times that of the bottom measurement. The pole to withers should be 1.25 times that of the bottom. And again, this reflects the way that they respond in the bridle and how they can flex their neck and their pole. And this not only means, you know, vertically, but it also means from side to side. You know, they won't have that elasticity, and they won't have the agility to be able to move their body like that. And when they can't move their head, which they balance with, their head and neck, which they balance with, it affects the whole rest of their body.
Sure.
So then, you know, so then we go ahead and we do measurements from the elbow to the coronet band and from the stifle to the coronet band. Now, if these distances are the same, then what you have is an ideal pleasure animal. He has the evenness and the balance in his legs to keep the withers and the haunches on the same plane. In other words, the haunches aren't higher than the withers aren't higher than the haunches. So that makes your ideal pleasure animal, but that also gives your animal a lot of versatility, especially if his measurements are even from pole to withers and from withers to croup, because now you're talking about a really balanced animal because his legs are the same distance. And so he has a lot of versatility. He should be able to do a lot of things really well. Maybe nothing to excess if the measurements of the forearm to the coronet band is higher or longer than that from the stifle to the coronet band, then you have an animal that can excel in reining because his shoulders are higher. That means his haunches will be able to reach further underneath. So he will be able to do the slides really well, the spins really well, because his movement will be initiated from the haunches. And because the withers are higher, then he'll be a lot lighter in front and be able to do the spins really, really easily. He won't have a lot of pressure on his haunches when he's doing those sliding stops. And not only that, he can excel as a jumper, because that's what you need, is that impulsion from the haunches to get over those fences and keep the front end light. Now, a certain amount of that you can do with postural exercises that balance the body. We hear about animals who have really rough gaits, for instance. Those animals can be much improved with postural training, because what we're talking about is strengthening all of the elements that support the skeletal frame. And those are deep in the body. We're not talking about butt muscle over the top. We're talking about the muscles that are deepest in the animal's body, that are holding up the bones, the tendons, the ligaments, the soft tissue, All of these things have to be strengthened to hold up those bones properly so that they can hold that good posture. And that takes a whole lot of leading exercises like I have in the hourglass pattern that are the equivalent of what Pilates is for human beings. And Pilates should not be used in any artificial way. No going to the gym, you know, Pilates you can do in your living room, and that's as it should be. And the leading exercises through the hourglass pattern assimilate just moving through the environment. That it's not really learning a pattern as much as it is just allowing the animal to do gradual turns and straight lines and allowing the internal pendulum to swing back and forth. And then there are spots in there where you square them up and that pendulum can come to rest while they've got equal weight over all 4 feet. And this kind of stuff just targets all of those elements that are deep in the body. The other thing it does is when they get strong, they cause the joints to move the way they're intended so that the cartilage in the joints gets worn evenly. And that's what's really important as they age and as they're developing, because, you know, when they're young, the cartilage is not hard, it's soft, and it's trying to find its place. So that's why it's preferable to go ahead and do exercises like this with your youngsters, so that cartilage and all that tissue that's soft when they're young is developed properly in their bodies, so that you don't get uneven wearing, which would cause crooked legs, it can cause sickle hock, it can cause, you know, toed out, toed in, all of these different things. And sometimes they can't even so much as stand up straight. You know, that's a hard balance for them. And that's why doing these very passive exercises on the lead line like this is really important. And when you do them, you will find that because you have to lead your animal a certain way to allow for their own self-carriage to develop those things properly, you'll find yourself having to be in good posture to lead them properly, with the lead rope in your left hand and not in your right, a loop in front of your body, their head at the shoulder, but then they're carrying their own balance, and you don't have that lead rope in your hand when you're walking, which can affect the way that they're walking, no matter how subtle. Yet when you walk, you don't realize it, but you're moving their head when you have it in your right hand. You're moving their head left and right, left and right, and left and right, which offsets their balance, which offsets the development of those internal tissues that are around the bones. And this is what is super important as they age, because if they don't wear those things evenly, then they begin to develop calcium deposits in their body wherever it's out of good posture. That can be in all the joints. It can be what's called kissing spine, in all those spinous processes that are like fingers across their spine. If they don't learn to stretch their bodies from head to tail in a rounded fashion, in a good posture, then those bones rub together and calcium deposits get in there and they glue those bones together. And pretty soon they get sore because they don't have the flexibility or elasticity to move that part of their body freely. And see, is this making sense to you?
Oh, sure. Oh, my gosh.
But these are things that we don't usually think about.
Sure.
But I think it's really important that we do, because we need to prep these guys for the weight we're going to put on their back. Because equines are designed to carry most of their weight underneath the spine, and that's all of their guts, their belly, the hay that's going through them and everything. And I might mention at this point how important it is just how we feed them. A lot of people think that, oh, yeah, okay, well, I got a pasture, I can throw them out there. But see, it's nutrition that feeds all those internal elements in our body. It's a chemical reaction in our bodies, the way that all these things work. So if you're feeding them something that is abnormal for an equine to eat, like sandwiches, peppermints, treats, horse treats that are produced in a lab, a lot of these horse feeds aren't even healthy for them. I found that the most healthy thing for them is simply crimped oats.
Right.
Or any kind of oats that are broken open.
Right. Right.
And it keeps the intestines fully expanded. And then if you feed them three times a day and you feed their oats mix at night, the grass hay is fine, but anything with alfalfa in it creates gas. And then it starts creating an irregularity in their intestines. And it allows, in those empty gas spaces, it allows for colic.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get colic, then with that space in there, the guts can twist.
Oh, yeah.
And they can get really, really sick. The other thing it does is it affects chemical reactions in their body that can cause allergies. And they get itchy. They get bumps all over their bodies. And they have problems that way. And people just like to write it off by saying, oh, well, they must be allergic to this or allergic to that. Well, in a way, in a sense, that's probably true. But when you put them on grass hay only, you know, three times a day, monitor their turnout time, no more than 5 hours a day, and keep them in dry lots. And you can have a fairly good-sized dry lot, so they can move around. And they've got hay to eat and everything, so they don't get bored. And if you have fences, it's really important to make sure that your fences can't get chewed. Because when you allow for cribbing, for instance,
sure,
then they develop those vices.
Yeah.
And we're actually contributing to them. My animals don't have any vices, but then all my fences are steel or the plastic vinyl with a hot wire on it, so they don't even touch them.
Okay.
And I think that, you know, if you don't allow the vices to start, then they eventually just go away. They don't even think about it because it's not there, you know. And this comes into talking about personality types, too. And across the board, you can't say that one breed has got a certain personality and another breed doesn't. And people like to say, oh, yeah, quarter horses are so common, or thoroughbreds and Arabians are crazy, manic animals.
Right.
That's not true either.
Right.
You know, I have found that these animals are all individuals like people. And you got to approach them like that. Everybody's different, and you can't judge people by the color of their skin or the shape of their body or whether they're tall or short. You know, although there are certain things that do come true, short males do tend to have a Napoleon complex, and so do ponies, you know, if you look at it that way. But not all ponies are like that, and not all short guys are like that either. So that just shows you that, you know, when you're dealing with these guys, you got to be looking at the individual. And there are kind of a couple of tests that you can do to kind of find out what their general personality is likely to be like by doing some of these very simple tests. You just have somebody, you know, put a halter on your animal, have somebody hold it for you, and then you go out in front of the animal and just pick up some dirt in your hand and let it sift through your hands. And if they look at you and they go, oh, what's she doing? That's going to be an animal that is attentive to you, that is interested in doing things with you, who really doesn't care about the person that's holding on to them, but they're caring about what you're doing and they want to participate.
Sure.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, if the animal looks away and then looks at the person that's holding them, that's as good as getting snubbed.
Oh,
like, I don't care what you're doing. I mean, I like this person right here who isn't doing anything, and I'm just going to hang out too.
Right. Oh,
and
my gosh.
And that kind of an animal and that kind of an attitude is going to be a little more difficult to deal with, because it's going to require that you get a little bit more creative on how to catch their attention. It doesn't mean they're useless. It just means you're going to have to work harder.
Right.
You know? So that's fine, you know. And then there's another test that you can do. You can walk up to them and stand by their shoulder, take a hold of the side of their halter, and pull it into your chest. And if they give really easily, again, that shows an interest in engaging with you. And not only that, they get an intimate feeling with you by doing that, because they're releasing the resistance in their head and neck. And again, you got to take into consideration those measurements, because if you've got an animal that's got a short neck and a long back, he may have some trouble wrapping that neck around you and bringing his head to your chest. So don't judge it on whether he can bring it all the way around, only if he's making the attempt and making it go as far as he is physically able to do that, you know. And then that's a good test, and that means yes, they're engaged. If he pulls against you, that means I'm not interested in anything you have to do with me. I want to go do my own thing. And again, if you've got one like that, it doesn't mean they're impossible. Just means it's going to take a little bit more time, and maybe you just work on that one movement of just getting their head around your chest. Just get them to do that, and that in itself may be a lesson for weeks, you know. And but you got to be patient enough to take the time to do that and give them a reason to get engaged. And when they do wrap their head around your chest and everything, you should be wearing your fanny pack full of oats for a reward, and that's the only kind of reward they should get, because it's healthy for them, and they love them. They'll leave grass for oats. They will follow you anywhere for oats, and that's not a bad thing. A lot of people go, oh, yeah, they're just doing it for the food. Well, maybe people do that, but animals, they need a reward for doing the behaviors that they do, and they're absolutely honest in their reaction.
Oh, sure. And, yes.
Yeah. And if you're asking the right way, then you're going to get the right response. And if you reward them for it, that just assures that you're going to keep getting that same response. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, everybody needs a reward of some kind when they do something. You know, we like to, as people, get our notoriety. We've got people that are settling for 3 minutes of fame on the news, you know. But we all need a pat on the head or a reward of some kind. And animals think the pat on the head is really kind of silly. They go, oh, yeah. And then when people do it, they usually do it too hard.
Right.
And it doesn't feel good.
Right.
Or they rub the hair the wrong way, and it doesn't feel good. You know, so that's not really a reward for the animal when you do that, you know. Another test that's a really good test, too, is when if you stand there and just lightly rub your fingers across their belly down below, and if they flinch, and in the flanks, if they flinch, then you've got an animal that's going to have an overreaction to your aids in your legs, particularly. Although they can also have, if they're flinching there, they're probably going to be flinching all, they'll have tension through their whole body, which means that even pulling on the reins a little bit can aggravate them. And so all that tells me is that I have to be a little bit lighter with my legs. I have to come in so they know that it's coming. And one of the ways that you can do that is by learning to ride with your legs against their body 24/7. And when you want to give them pressure to move off your leg, you just squeeze that leg in. So it's not coming abruptly out of nowhere. And that's really important when you've got an animal that's really flinchy like that. Now, animals that are kind of, well, I call dead bodies, they're going to take a little bit more to get them to move. If you put your legs on a guy like that, then they're going to, oh, she's hugging me, how sweet, you know. And then you go to squeeze it, and then they go, oh, how nice, she's giving me a tighter hug. but I'm not moving. So you might need blunt spurs to kind of wake those kind up, you know. But I have also learned how to do it without the spurs by just simply digging my heel into their side.
Right.
And that's a little bit less huggy than just putting a little bit more pressure there. But you know, there's a lot of detail to this kind of thing, you know, in assessing your equine, that if you pay attention to it, you can almost completely eliminate any kind of resistance during training, you know, because you just learn, you know, what these personalities are like. You feed them the right way, you keep their weight right, and when their weight is right, they don't get lazy. You know,
right.
We as human beings, we put on a little weight, we get kind of lazy.
Yeah.
And we get kind of uncomfortable. And when we don't walk in good posture, then we get different sorenesses in our bodies. And you can do some, what did I do to get this crook in my neck? Did I sleep the wrong way? Did I sit the wrong way? And a lot of times it doesn't take much if you're not in really good shape by paying attention to your good posture all day long. That simply means that there's something in your body that is developed asymmetrically around those bones instead of symmetrically. Because when it's symmetrical, you don't get that much movement around the joints and around the bones, and they keep the bones stable, and then the nerve endings and things don't have the ability to get pinched. It's kind of like, you know, the digestive tract. When it's full all the time with the right kind of food, then it doesn't have the opportunity to twist. I just talked to my vet here just the other day, and he was saying, is everybody out there okay? I haven't seen you guys for a really long time, except for vaccinations. Nobody's died. Nobody has any problems. Your animals are all really old. And are you guys doing okay? Did you get another vet?
Oh.
But he says, no, everybody's doing just fine. You know, but I also learned when I had rock and roll that there are a lot of therapies out there that are being developed in laboratories and in colleges to work with animals and stuff. And not that I'm discounting their research, but I am.
Sure.
I think that we have everything that we need right here in our world, and we don't have to use a lot of the artificial things that we do. One of my biggest gripes is supplements, for instance. If you're going to feed supplements, you better darn well do a lab test and find out what you're lacking in.
Right,
You start shoveling stuff to yourself or to your animals.
Right.
Because it might be something as simple as the food you're eating.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Know? And so you got to take that into consideration. And when you have a regular diet, for instance, I was having trouble with my stomach, getting very nervous all the time, and I was eating things that were hot Mexican foods, and it was upsetting my stomach. And the only way that I could even make it get calmer and feel better was to eat Cheerios.
Well, Cheerios? Really?
I'm going, oh my God, what an illumination here. Maybe I don't need to feed my animals this mixed sweet feed and all this. Maybe I should just go to the oats.
There you go.
And I did that. That was a long time ago, but I did that. My animals they've been physically healthy ever since. But when you look at things, too, in terms of them being chemical reactions, you know, I mean, I learned a lot in college, too, about how those things work. And so those chemical reactions can do some pretty detrimental things. The other thing about these measurements and stuff that you take and assess the conformation of your animal and how they're moving is really simple movement physics. When you measure those lengths, you know, the lengths of the bones, length of the cannon bone versus the length of the forearm versus the measurements on the head, the neck, the back, and all of those things, and they start moving, you realize that this has a lot to do with physics, too, because the fulcrum of movement should be in the center of these two short pieces that you have. And if you've got one long piece and one short piece, it's definitely going to affect their movement.
Oh, you bet. Yes.
If we're talking about the knees and the hocks, and you've got a long forearm and a really short cannon bone, that'll give them a lot of reach in the front. But if you've got a short stifle to hock and a longer cannon bone back there, they can't reach underneath the center of gravity because it's not even at the hocks.
Sure.
You stifle the hock.
Right.
To pastern. You know, so those measurements are really important too, and that's all simple physics. You know, when you're talking about lines and bending points, which are the fulcrums and everything, and how they affect a drawing that you have with a lot of lines, which is nothing more than your skeleton, you know, then you can start assessing what these different animals are going to be able to do by the measurements they have. And if they don't have a balanced body and they do have a longer back, what I would say, it's more than ever important to do postural exercises with those guys with a longer back, because you want to strengthen those core supports around their bodies. And when you try to do that with supplements or medications or injections and things like that that they use to fix animals that have arthritis, for instance, and calcium deposits growing in abnormal places like in the stifle. Stifle joints are getting to be a really common thing to get locked up.
Oh, yeah.
But you can actually heal that with these core strength exercise, postural exercises in the hourglass pattern on the lead line, and teach them how to walk in good posture so that they don't keep aggravating the same places, so that their movement is continuously forward and they're bending those joints as well as they can, given their individual conformation. Then you don't aggravate areas by having them wear unevenly from uneven asymmetrical movement. And when I took rock and roll, for instance, they had ring bone and side bones and calcium deposits, kissing spine. They had everything on the planet, including Rock had a shattered hip.
Yeah. But, wow.
But I got him sound at the lock for a whole year with no medications, making them lame anymore, because they weren't just aggravating the same places. Now they're in good balance, they were walking the way they should, trotting the way they should, cantering the way they should, although I did not ride roll at the canter because I thought it might aggravate his balance and then it would go back to the old way of moving. I did find out that when you do these postural exercises on the lead line and you do not ride for 2 years, and you do all this stuff working up to, you do the leading exercises through the pattern, you do the leading exercises through obstacles to add coordination up, down, sideways, and everything, teach them to move the right way that way, then they can graduate to the round pen, because then they will keep the equal weight over all 4 feet and keep that posture while they're on a circle doing walk, trot, canter. Whereas if you just go right into the round pen and start there, one of the most obvious things that happen is they put the weight to the inside feet and lift the weight on the outside feet, and that's uneven weight over all 4 feet. They lean like a motorcycle and they create sore spots by doing that. Does that make sense?
Oh, you bet. You bet. And,
yeah.
You know, this just clarifies a lot of doing some rethinking out there. And people just don't think about details when it comes to their body conformation and what they're feeding them. They just don't, you know, take that into consideration. So,
well, I think we all start out and we just want to ride.
Yeah.
Our friends are going trail riding. We want to go with them. So we jump on and we go.
So what do you say to a person like that? They just want to go trail riding.
Well, I had a person like that that called me on the phone, and her animal was sore and lame all the time. You know, this is what happens as they age.
Sure.
But the animal was only 12 years old. And you know, with mules, they can live till they're 40, 50 years old.
Oh, yeah.
Their youth life is going to depend on how you take care of their bodies. And so I was talking to her about everything. I was just talking to you about it. And she goes, well, what am I going to say to my friends when they call me up on the weekend and they want me to go trail riding with them? I say, well, why don't you just invite them to come down and do postural exercises with you?
Very good.
You know, I mean, those really can be as much fun, if not more fun, than going trail riding.
Right, right.
Because there are so many victories that you will experience with your animal. And what you think is a really good bond becomes so much deeper, you didn't even know it could exist, you know? It's just amazing. You know, I was telling you, we were shooting some live action in dress stuff out at the old Western town, and I took some of my mules out there, and we packed donkeys that had never been packed, and they were really good. We packed the large standard and a mini, and they were great. And then I was playing the sheriff, and so I was supposed to stand in front of the jail with my mule. And I opted to use Merlin because it made me feel like Matt Dillon and his buckskin horse on Gunsmoke.
Yeah.
So I took Merlin out there, and I tried tying him to the post I was standing next to, and he pushed me out of the way, and he climbed up on the boardwalk. Well, the only thing that was a little bit kooky about that is he got up on the boardwalk, and right behind me and right at the end of the hitch rail was a water trough, and Merlin just went up on the boardwalk and started climbing into the water trough.
Whoa.
And I told everybody, I said, my mules are not afraid of anything. I guess we can't tie him here. And so we had to move him down a post to the post by the church where there wasn't anything like that.
What a
hoot. But that's what I mean when the bond gets so deep that they completely and totally trust you.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
And he wasn't just climbing over crazy over that water trough. He was listening to what I was doing. I had him tied to the post, so I was just working the lead rope a little bit, and he was up on the boardwalk, and he hunched down like he was going to jump it, but the rope was too short, so I jerked it back, and I can't jump it then. Okay, fine. Well, then I'll put my foot in the middle of it. So he put his foot down to the bottom in the middle of it and stood there and looked at me and went, well, now what? I said, now take your foot out of the water trough, you know. So he took his foot out. But then when he took it out, he put it on the far edge of the water trough and put his weight on it over there. And Chad told me that he was afraid that maybe they hadn't built that water trough strong enough to withstand his weight, and then he might crush the water trough.
Oh, no. You know?
But he didn't, and he ultimately just backed up, and I took him down to the church and tied him up. But see, these are the kind of funny things that you can have so much fun with, you know, just working on a lead line with them. Once you get that core strength going on, they know that when they start feeling better, that you're the one that's responsible for them feeling better because of the exercises you're doing. And
yes.
Then they don't resist it. And
yeah.
Then they're more willing to go with you. And if you've got multiple animals, they all line up at the gate and go, take me. You know, I want to go. And their ears are always perked. They're always
yes.
attentive.
Yes.
You know, they want to be with you and want, you know, because you got more control over this than you think you do. But, you know, when you're stuck in the beginning and everybody's all about riding and they're bigger animals.
Right.
And do this. You
right.
know, then the next thing that you might get hung up on is making them do tricks, you know, but that doesn't necessarily convert to being really responsive to your aids and doing things that are more difficult under saddle.
Right,
later.
Right. Very you well know, said.
And people have seen the pictures of me doing combined training and dressage with my mules against horses. I mean, I'm flying over the cross country course, jumping wagons, jumping off cliffs and into water, and doing all these kinds of things that would have horrified my animals had they been out of balance. But it built their confidence, it built mine. Even when I started doing this core strength stuff, I'll go ahead and try this stuff. And I started by doing dressage, and that was pretty benign. And then I was pretty amazed at how much I was gaining and how I actually made fourth level dressage without using a full bridle. I did it in a snapple bit. And because Sonny didn't like it when I put the full bridle on him, he let me know in no uncertain terms that that was not going to be. I was not going to force him to do this. He was happy to do it. There was not going to be any forcing this issue, and he was only going to get better step by step by step as he was able to put out himself and as I was asking appropriately. And so he got really good at that, and then maybe CT, she did really well. She got up to second level dressage, which is what's required in combined training at the level that she worked at novice level against the horses. And she was jumping fences up to 3 feet. But she was doing it so clean and so balanced that we had fun doing it. And it was because it was fun that I felt confident. My animals felt confident. So I went from doing dressage to doing jumping, which I swore I wasn't even going to do. My trainer said, oh, let's just try it. Started me over ground poles, and that felt pretty good, you know. And then she just put us over a Cavaletti that was only 6 inches high. And I was amazed at how stable I felt when I was jumping. Now, I didn't expect it to be that way because I had jumped horses before, and they kind of did a kind of a twisty thing over the jump that kind of dislodged me from the saddle. But with the mules, my God, they're so stable anyway.
Right.
And then to affect their balance in this positive way, it made me do something I had no intention of doing. I gained confidence, they gained confidence, and we just had fun trying all kinds of new things. That's why, you know, people are horrified to watch a lot of those people that live in areas down in Arizona where those cliff things are.
Right.
They've got their animals jumping up on rocks and stuff like that. But you can tell, if you watch them carefully, those guys are prepping those animals as they're going through. And those animals have been prepped to do those movements.
Oh, you bet. Sure.
They do it so well. You
yeah.
know? So I'm real careful about criticizing or judging anybody else for what they're doing with their animals, because a lot of these people look like they've been prepped, they've taken a lot of time, you know, and effort to do the right kinds of things so that not them or their animals are going to be hurt.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Now, that's not to say there aren't people that watch that stuff and think they can go out and just do it. You know?
Yeah.
It's always going to be that, you know?
Yeah.
I was even one of those a long time ago, too, you know?
That's when they get that free ride to the ER, right?
Well, I never did, because I was kind of a chicken, too. I didn't go the full gamut. In fact, when Steve Schwarzenberger, I gave Sundowner to Steve Schwarzenberger as a three-year-old to have him train him for reining. And he did. And I went down to visit him one day, and I asked where Steve was, and the arena was all closed up. And the guys in the barn said, oh, he's in the arena and Sundowner's running away with him. Well, how long have they been in there? Oh, about 20 minutes now. Is he still running? Yeah, he's still running. He missed a flying lead change, and Steve's just riding him through until he gets it. Oh, God, that's the wrong thing to do.
Well, yeah. You know? There you go.
But, see, after doing that, Sundowner never really liked reining. So when I got him back and I tried to do the reining, he would run off with me.
Oh, yeah.
If he made a mistake, he would run off with me. And we went out to Bishop and he would run off with me on a racetrack. And one time he ran off with me and he cut right through the middle of the racetrack and there was a water truck behind the grandstand. And it was only a narrow space of about 5 feet to run through. Luckily, there weren't any people standing there, but he goes running through there. And I had to put my legs up over his croup and hang around his neck just to fit through there. But I found out something really interesting at home after that happened. He kind of slowed down really easily there and didn't dump me. But when I got home and he ran off, he would run off and then he'd come to a sliding stop and duck his head. And I thought, well, I don't want to get hurt. So that worked pretty well going through that space with my legs up on his sides like that and looped my arms around his neck. So I did that. And when I did that, I slowly slid down his neck and did a somersault and landed sitting in front of him looking at his face. Ooh. And that's how I got dumped. But I never fell hard, see?
I'd like a movie of that move.
Oh, it was amazing. And when it happened, and it happened multiple times,
oh,
I got really
boy.
Good at it, I'll tell you what. And I can honestly say I have never broken a bone or gotten seriously injured. Once I got a concussion. Once. I was teaching my two-year-old mule, Cici, how to drive, and she hated driving. And we were in the indoor arena, and she threw me out of the cart because she bolted and ran and went around the corner. And I wasn't wearing a helmet, and I hit my head on a post. And when I woke up, I was in the hospital, and it was afternoon, and I had started in the morning. And my husband told me that I actually came to, caught the mule, took the harness off, put her back in her stall, and then collapsed, and then he took me to the hospital.
Ooh.
Yeah, that was the only time, and that was like in 1984.
Yeah, wow.
But I have never broken a bone with the mules. I've never gotten seriously hurt.
Hmm.
You know, that was the only time. My mules look out after me, but like I said, I was a real chicken, and I didn't want to get hurt anyway, so I didn't try anything that I didn't think I could do. And when I started combined training in 1986 with maybe CT, I was just going to do dressage. I wasn't even going to do jumping. I was just doing dressage. Combined training was not in the schedule. I
right,
was not
right.
even thinking about it. But I got confidence from doing those exercises and slowing things down and, you know, spending more time on building my body and my animals' bodies correctly and not getting so much into the riding part of it. I mean, the first thing I wanted to do when I got on my mule before that was, I want a side pass, until I realized what an advanced move a side pass really is. And how it's really conducive to getting cricks in your body. And
there you go.
If you're not prepped for it.
Right.
You know? So, and as I'm getting older now, I'm having all kinds of fun with these guys. You know, we're just doing a whole lot of liberty training and stuff we already know how to do that I did on the lead rope before. I went out and shot. Gosh, my crew is getting so they don't want to miss anything, so they take pictures of everything. And we took 3,600 pictures yesterday of Liberty Trail in the open arena with the obstacle.
When we get together next, let's talk about that Liberty training, because that is fascinating stuff.
It truly is. But again, I will say one thing in conclusion, that Liberty training should not be done until you do the postural training.
Okay,
because
very well
said.
You
have to take into account that nobody is born with good posture. It must be taught.
You bet. All right, Meredith, you have a good one.
You too, Cindy.
Meredith's website is lucky3ranch.com, and you can call her at 1-800-816-7566. And I can be reached through my website, everycowgirlsdream.com. Don't forget, hit the subscribe button.
Gotta go. My mule is looking for me.
Mule Talk is an Every Cowgirl's Dream production.